Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are James Jones.
Hello and to welcome.
John Lindemann.
It's great to be here, Johnny.
I know. And Guillaume Veillette.
It is a pleasure to be here, Johnny.
Sure is.
It's fucking sure to be here, Johnny.
All right, guys. We have a really packed show for you tonight. We're going to try to cram in a lot of stuff. And among other things, we've got your listener mail and a big holiday preview feature featuring Mr. Veillette, who got to play Mario 3D World and the 2DS and lots of other stuff. So we're gonna have to grill you, Guillaume, on all the Wii U games coming out soon.
Yeah, those Luigi cupcakes were a little bit too sweet. Thumbs down. Nintendo has dropped the ball for the last time.
Man. Okay, so we're going to kick off with new business as usual, and I'm going to go first just because I've been playing the biggest release of the past month probably on any Nintendo system, and that would be Pokemon X and Y. And we haven't talked about this game a whole lot on the show. I think most of us have pretty much burned out on Pokemon over the years. But this is the first one I've played since Diamond. So it's been 6 or 7 years for me.
I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. I keep saying I'm going to get it, but it's like, it's just not a priority.
And John, you did play Black and White, and Guillaume, did you play Black and White too?
No, my first Pokemon game was the Ruby Red, and then I bought Gold and like the Pokewalker thing, but I never played it. So, and I sold it before playing it. It was just like, I'm very interested in hearing what you have to say, because like, is this the Pokemon game that's going to, you know, grab me? I don't know
either yet. I mean, I really haven't played a whole lot of it because I only got my 3DS like 3 days ago. And so as soon as I got it up and running, I downloaded Pokemon along with all the other games that were, you know, they basically sent me a new system per the warranty or whatever. So you know, it was wiped clean. I lost all my save files. I lost all my street passes. And apparently I also lost, the only thing I can find like that I actually paid for that I don't have access to are the Street Pass bonus games that came out a few months ago, like, you know, Mii Force and Monster Manor, whatever that thing is. And those are re-locked, which I'm kind of surprised about. So I guess I could pay again, and it's tempting because I really did like those two.
But shouldn't Nintendo be able to send you a code or something to redeem?
Yeah, but then I have to go and nag their customer service, and I don't know if it's worth it for, you know, $4 or however much those are. No, I guess they're $5 a piece, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't know. That is kind of expensive for what they are. Now, especially now that I've experienced a lot of those two games. But it would be nice to spend more time with them, especially since I haven't been to like a really big event since those things came out. Anyway, the short version is the first Pokemon game for me in quite a while. And I have always liked Pokemon. I mean, my first one was Blue back in 98. I was the only person my age playing it, which was kind of sad, but, you know, at least around my hometown. But I still had a really great time with it as a single-player game. And, you know, I've kind of checked in with it over the years and some of the spinoffs and everything. But, you know, I was really getting excited about Pokemon X and Y. We saw it at E3 and got to sit at that sort of roundtable thing and heard a lot about it. And I was just really impressed. The fact that they went back over what, 700 or something like that monsters over all the other games, and they 3D modeled every single one of them and gave them new sound effects. And I just thought that was like turning this game from 2D into 3D was clearly a lot more work than it is for a lot of other franchises, just because of the huge volume of content that they've put together over the past 15 years. So I was just really amazed that they actually pulled that off, because I would have thought the first 3D game in the series, they're probably going to have like a subset of them, kind of like with the old original Japanese Pokemon Stadium, which never came out anywhere else. You know, it only had like, I think, 60 of the monsters in there, because that was the first time they'd ever built 3D models for those guys, and it's a lot of work to do that, and they just couldn't get it, you know, together in time. That's what I was excited about. Like, I kind of knew that it would still play like Pokemon, and it definitely does. You know, the gameplay has not changed very much at all. It's really almost purely a visual break, at least for me, not being as enamored with all the, like, the minutia of the mechanics and the EVs and all that weird stuff that they're doing. So for me, all I really cared about was that I want it to be better presented. I want the music to sound better and the graphics to be finally in 3D. And they finally got there, you know. Took a very long time for the series to make that jump, but yeah. I'm happy that they did. And I think it, you know, it's not the best looking 3DS game, but it's by far the best looking Pokemon RPG game. So, you know, I really do like the kind of cel-shaded art style that they chose for the monsters. I'll say the Pokemon 3D models are not that detailed, at least the ones I've seen so far. But also I'm really early in the game, and so I have the less evolved forms of all the Pokemon, and I'm guessing as they become bigger and sort of more intricate, the models might be a little more impressive. So I'm looking forward to seeing that stuff, and yeah, I mean, so far I do really like it, and I think it looks very good. So, Guillaume, why don't we go with you next?
All right. I'm not sure how to broach this one. I've got a long and complicated history with Secret of Mana. And I've tried to play it before, initially when it first came out on the VC, and I could not get into it, which was surprising to me, because I had heard so much good stuff about Secret of Mana. My friends would keep talking about it, and they would just be like, wow, this is one of the greatest Super Nintendo games that you could possibly ever play. So
that's a pretty widespread reputation.
It is. And I think it was... James Charlton on Twitter, who told me, oh, yeah, I love this game, but I think it might have to do with the fact that us Europeans never got Chrono Trigger or Mario RPG or, I don't know, some Final Fantasy. Anyway, like the choices for RPGs were really, really sparse.
So they did get Secret of Mana.
They did. And I remember way back in the day, I saw a lot of like Belgian TV shows, video game TV shows talk about the game, or I at some point I bought a whole bunch of European gaming mags and they were talking about the game incessantly. So
it's like Europe's Earthbound.
I guess so. Yeah. And I had, you know, like seeing the still images, the game did look great and the boss is huge. And also I was aware that it's a sequel to Final Fantasy Adventure, which I grew up with. So I thought for sure that I would like it more than I do. But yeah, the first time that I tried it, immediately I was turned off by the combat, which is very kind of turn-based, but not really.
It involves a lot of waiting for percentages.
Yeah. You guys really talked about this in great detail in the episodes 140 and 141. It was the retroactive game, and you went into pretty much all the problems that I have with the game. You have to wait for a bar to recharge to fill up before you can even think of attacking the enemy again. Otherwise, you do one or two damage, which is really not worth it. And the enemies will avoid you, but there's no animation showing them avoiding you. So you will swing at them, and they won't get damage at all, and you just assume, oh, okay, well, poor collision detection, or they dodged, you know. And when they dodge and when they don't doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you were standing, like where you were standing, how you hit them, or anything like that. It's just a roll of the dice. So it's really like it's really off-putting because the game looks like a Zelda game. It looks like it's way more action-y than it actually is, and the way that you cast spells also is really different. You go into a menu which freezes the whole screen, and while you go through the menu, this kind of ring of spells, then you cast your spell and it goes automatically to the enemy that you targeted, and there's no skill to it. It's just you shoot a fireball, it's going to reach its target. And the same is true of the enemies. They use magic on you way before you can use magic on them, and it's extremely annoying because they're like, no matter where you run, they're always going to hit you, they're always going to find you, and there's just, you're kind of left wondering, well, what's the point of me even moving? And all of this was incredibly off-putting. Right now, I'm enjoying it more, if solely because I'm playing it co-op.
Sure, yeah, that's definitely the way to go.
Yeah. You've got, at all times, after you find them, you've got three characters. And I think that if you had to multitap back in the day, three people could play at the same time.
That's
right.
Correct.
Now I'm playing with one other player, so the AI is controlling the third character, which you can kind of take over yourself. Like, you can bring up their magic menu and shoot spells from, like, you know, without switching to them. So anyway, it's really,
and
really weird.
I think the cooperative multiplayer is the reason that this game really stands out through the, you know, such an esteemed platform as the Super NES and all the RPGs that it had, because a co-op RPG is, especially of the turn-based variety, which is essentially what you said it is,
yes,
is so rare even now. And going back then, it was completely unheard of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was maybe one of the closest things to like a Dungeons and Dragons console RPG, because yeah, each person got to control their own character and make all these different RPG-like menu-based decisions at the same time. And we'd never seen that before. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, especially even if you didn't know what Dungeons and Dragons was, it captures the same appeal of playing that, you know, which is that everybody is on this quest together and they're working together and they each have different skills and you kind of talk to each other and divide up how you're going to do it. It's
yeah,
amazing. You know, and the game itself, I would say, you know, much like a lot of MMO RPGs, probably the gameplay itself is maybe not that interesting and kind of repetitive, but because you do it with teams, mm-hmm, it's worthwhile.
Yeah, although at the same time, I'm kind of trying to manage my partner here. I don't want the girlfriend to get too tired of it. And I, you know, we recently acquired magic, and apparently you have to use magic as much as possible to upgrade it, to level it up.
That helps, yeah, which makes it a little like Final Fantasy II, the Japanese Final
Fantasy
II.
And of course, you're limited by the number of magic points that you have, and you have very few of them. So you always constantly, and the only way, as far as I can tell, to gain back magic points is to go to the inn. So it's just constantly grinding.
Eventually you learn the ability, there's a magic spell that lets you steal magic points from enemies, and that's a big
help. Oh, okay. All right, so I'll
I don't know, I don't remember how late in the game that is, though.
Hmm. Maybe I'll stop grinding spells for now, and because it's extremely, like, I find myself being very apologetic for the game. You know, I'm just like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, we're gonna have to grind some enemies now, and maybe, you know, like, if I can do that by myself, and then we'll, you know, like, we'll play together and we'll actually have fun.
Are you trying to level up, like, all the weapons and all the magic spells that you get, or just kind of pick your favorites and stick with them and let them grow with you?
Well, you kind of level up the spells by group. So I've been,
yeah,
trying to kind of level them up all, and, but not the weapons. I've heard that it's not really worth doing so.
No, and it takes forever.
All right.
You
all
can
right.
actually forge things up to level 9 if you get a certain orb in the last dungeon of the game.
Hmm.
And those take really long time to level up your skills for. It's just crazy. Yeah. It's a rabbit hole that's not really worthwhile.
Yeah. So the game is weird. It's confusing. I find myself, we're really lost, and we always need to be at one end of the map, and when we're at the other end, and it's always kind of a pain to get from point A to point B and to just finding where to go next. So it's, I don't know if I'm going to stick with it until the end. I want to, but it's, I don't know. It's kind of a mess of a game.
Yeah. So, but before we move on, Guy, I was just wondering. I mean, my memory bandwidth for RFN is maybe 200 episodes max, and this
mm-hmm.
one is just outside that. Do
yeah.
you recall whether we overall really enjoyed it, or were we kind of on the same page with you, like, wow, this really doesn't hold up as well as I was hoping?
In episode 140, you are very critical of it, and I don't know. There's some enjoyment being had, I guess, but mostly you guys really focus on the problems. And then 141, no one has really finished a game yet, so it's you know, it's hard to tell. Only
but
James
we're still playing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we got farther. Mm. I just remember,
but
I don't
only
remember.
I had what?
Only James had played it beforehand. He was not even,
yeah.
like, he didn't even want to participate at the same time as the other people. Oh, I've played this like 5 times before.
I've played that game a ton of times.
Yeah.
I've played the whole game. I've beaten the game before.
No, I remember. I've beaten that game a ton of times.
Yeah, I mean, I've played into it, but I've never beaten it just because of the many problems with it.
Yeah, yeah, I don't remember anything specifically that I criticized, although I don't doubt that I did. But I do remember for a long time after we did that, I kept feeling like, man, that's one of those retroactive games I really want to go back to and finish.
Yeah.
Because I was having fun with it. Well, it is nostalgic for me also. But also, you know, I grew up with the turn-based, more numbersy RPGs than you did. So for me, it was right in line with what I was used to.
No, but I also, you know, like my first RPG was Final Fantasy Legend 2. I was already kind of used to turn-based RPGs. It's just that the Secret of Mana is not a happy marriage of an action game and an RPG. I just don't. And what's funny is that I had played beforehand Final Fantasy Adventure, and that game is more of a Zelda with leveling up elements.
It's definitely got...
Like, you guys complain, oh, there's no puzzles in Secret of Mana. Well, there are puzzles in Final Fantasy Adventure. And all this weird thing of casting spells and them always hitting their target automatically, that does not happen in Final Fantasy Adventure.
Did you ever play the Sword of Mana remake?
Yeah, it's junk. But it brought back into Final Fantasy Adventures the bad elements of Secret of Mana. I tried playing through it and I did not finish it, despite, you know, this remade music that I was, you know, I love this music. And, you know, essentially, like, better graphics, better music, I should have been more into it than I was, but it was just a terrible, terrible game. And Final Fantasy Adventure is just, you know, like, you need skills to use different spells. They've got different effects. Like, you've got some that shoot straight forward. You've got some that target their enemies. The ice spell you had to basically direct with the D-pad, and there were some very cool puzzles that you could solve that way. You had, you know, like fake walls that you had to use a mattock to a pickaxe to reveal, and all this cool stuff. And I actually, you know, I loaded it up on the Wii Homebrew just to see, you know. Just to see if the game actually held up.
You bad boy.
Just to see if it held up to my memories. And it does. Like, immediately I was, wow, this feels way better than Secret of Mana feels.
Man, you're making me really jealous. That is probably the number one Game Boy game that I always wanted to play and never had a chance to.
I've lost hope. Square Enix can go to hell. It's just... I want to play that game again. I wish I could go back in time and tell little Guillaume, don't sell your Final Fantasy Adventure cartridge. But, yeah.
I think we know what you're getting for Christmas.
Oh, what? Anyway, so right. That's Secret of Mana. And I will keep playing it, but it's just, it's a little bit overrated.
Hmm. I would agree with that.
All right, guys. So let's move on to what John's been playing.
I have been playing The Last of Us, which I picked up for this in the Sony sale. It was like $36, so I figured, hey, you know, it was really good price, so, you know, games obviously got a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
So,
I did the same thing, but I haven't played
it
yet.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's gotten, you know, a lot of people are saying it's their game of the year easy, and, you know, really, you know, it got really, really high review scores. And the reason why I didn't pick it up at launch is because when I saw the E3 demo, I looked at it and I said, that's Uncharted 3 with zombies.
Right.
So that's kind of how I went into it. And I really haven't seen anything so far. I think I'm about 20% through. I've put about 3 hours into it. And I really haven't seen anything to really indicate that that's not the case. Right?
So you do feel it's very Uncharted.
It's very Uncharted. I mean,
it's weird. The things I'd heard about it made it sound like it would be a little more Metal Gear Solid, actually.
I mean, yeah, there's more stealth, but you're just doing it. It would just be like if they removed some of the shooting from like Uncharted 3 and made it into a stealth game.
There are stealth sections though in Uncharted 2 and 3, and they're terrible.
Well, yeah, I mean the stealth sections aren't bad at all. I mean, that's the thing. It's like it's a good game, right? But there's nothing in it. The only real new stuff that they've added to it, from what I've seen, is, you know, you can now kind of craft your own stuff. They have like a separate kind of crafting menu where you can you can create like your own bandages and stuff like that. And there's more stuff to collect because of that. Like you can collect a whole bunch of stuff to kind of go into the crafting. Like, you know, like you pick up bandages and knives and, you know, kind of stuff like that, that you can make this stuff out of that's hidden.
It's like Dead Rising where you like combine a lawnmower with a, you know, clown mask and you get the electrocutioner.
it's a little bit smaller scale than that, but, yeah, you know, you gather the ingredients to make like a, you know, like a you know, you gather alcohol and like a rag and, you know, a bottle and you can make a, you know, a Molotov cocktail, that kind of stuff.
But I guess it seems like most of the people who are so crazy about it are mainly for the story, and they say that the game plays really well, but it's not like anything revolutionary. Mm-mm. But the story is where what really, you know, has it on people's game of the year list, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, and the story so far has been okay. The opening is really powerful, which is probably one of the most powerful openings I've seen in a game to date.
I've seen that actually over the summer. I saw that at John Wren's house.
Yeah, it's crazy. And but see, the thing is though, with me, I saw that and I'm like, when I saw that, I was like, you know, maybe this is going to blow my mind and be something different than what I expected. But then when you actually start playing the game, it's pretty much just more Uncharted. You know what I mean? Like,
and I'm surprised to hear that.
And then I'm like, oh, so it's just an Uncharted game with kind of a reskinning to look like Boston, but really, it looks just more like any ruined American city. You know what I mean? Like, wow. that kind of whole motif.
But this isn't really necessarily a bad thing for you, is it? I mean, you love Uncharted.
Yeah, but it's just, but to me, because I've played all the other Uncharted games, it's nothing really new to me. It doesn't feel really fresh to me. It's like, you know, I mean, when the character, you know, walks like Uncharted, he runs around like Uncharted, the environment's...
You're still climbing all over the place?
Yep, you're still climbing all over the place.
Really?
Except, I mean, you can get, you know, you can, you know, climb stuff, like you can kind of solve environmental puzzles, like you can pick up a plank and, you know, put it up against a wall so you can, you know, climb up it or whatever.
And like, do you always end up like in some sort of room and they really want you to find something and you wander around the room as long as you don't find it and the guy keeps talking to himself like, oh, maybe I should look up here. Maybe I should look up here.
Yeah. Constantly. There's a lot of, yeah. I mean, it's exactly the same. And, you know, you have like your buddy characters, you know, so, you know, in Uncharted, you have like, Elena and Sully and, you know, they kind of follow you through the environment and they, you know, there's banter back and forth, and it's the same thing here.
Right.
You know, like you start off with Tessa. You don't start off with Ellie, the girl, until late. You don't actually pick her up until later. But I mean, it's the same thing where you're walking through the environment.
Wait, so he just goes from one girl to the next?
No, it's kind
it's
of part
a survival of hitchhiker.
Well, I mean, they're partners in crime kind of thing. So.
Yeah, but are they like Robin? Like one dies and another rises to take her place?
I don't know. I haven't gotten there yet. But
it just sounds really weird. You start with one girl and then you get a new one a little bit later.
That's she
like
becomes
vaguely insidious.
Well, no, I mean like that's the thing. They're smugglers, and she becomes something that they smuggle. Right. That's kind of part of the plot that I'm trying to remain spoiler free here.
Okay.
But that's part of the reason why like they take her along is they have to get her out of the city. But yeah, I mean, so I haven't really seen anything. I mean, it's just, it's very Uncharted-ish. I mean, it's Uncharted with a reskin basically. And you know, a lot darker plot and you're fighting zombies. Now, the one thing that is really cool is I really like the melee combat is really good. Like you can pick up pipes and bash things over the head, and that feels really good. Like it's really they've done that really well. It's really tuned so that, you know, like you can, it really feels good.
If you're into bashing, kind of introduce that at the beginning of Uncharted 2.
Yeah,
I put you in that bar scene where you have to beat up like 50 dudes.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And you're
if
like,
it was...
wow, but it's so easy, you know. You just kind of
It's
a tutorial.
It's actually very much kind of similar to the Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City combat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like they took pretty much everything that was in Uncharted 3 outside of the kind of crafting part of it. But they shifted the focus more to, you know, where like you could still, like in Uncharted 3, you could do the whole stealth thing and you could like sneak up behind guys and like, you know, snap their necks or whatever. But in the Last of Us, the focus has shifted to that. Whereas in Uncharted, you never really did that because you were just shooting guys most of the time. Mm-hmm. It was like kind of like a tool in your toolbox, but you never used them. You never had to. whereas that you actually have to in this game. So, but it doesn't really feel much different than Uncharted 3.
Wow. I'm so glad I didn't spend money on this.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It's not to say that I'm disappointed by it because, I mean, it's good, but so far it's, I'm just like, yeah, it's pretty much exactly what I thought.
I really liked Uncharted 2, but then PSN Plus got Uncharted 3 for free, so that's when I played it, and I couldn't stand it. And I'm not sure why.
It is a lot worse. It's a lot worse than 2.
Yeah, there's something about the way that the game constantly makes you, like, okay, here you're forced to walk, and you're forced to look at this environment that we made.
There's a lot of that in Last of Us, where like you'll be going through an environment, and all of a sudden, like, leading up to some sort of kind of plot point where they, you know, have the characters in some sort of movie, you'll all of a sudden like won't be able to run anymore, and you'll only be able to walk through an environment. And you'll be like, what the hell?
And my problem with 3 is that the gun action scenes just went on way too long, and they were so frustrating. It was up there with like Halo 4 for like some of the most frustrating shooter segments I've had to go through lately.
Yeah,
Gears of War 3 has a lot too, actually. That stuff where it's like, we made this really hard, but it's okay because you have infinite lives and you'll have a checkpoint right before the battle. So you can just try it 10 different times before you finally figure out. It's not really the way I like my shooters to be paced.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was one of the big weaknesses in Uncharted 3 where, you know, you'd be sitting there, you'd be like, am I not done this kill room yet? And it's like, there's like one guy hiding behind, you know, a barrel that you can't even see that's way at the other end.
And you cannot move on until you get that guy.
Yep. And this is similar to that. But again, there's not as many shootouts because the focus is on stealth. But it's there, you know.
Interesting.
You can do some other cool things. Like you can like pick up bricks because a lot of the enemies, because the you know, stealth is, you know, such a big part of it. You know, you can like pick up bricks and throw them to the other side of the room and enemies go and check that out. So you can sneak by them. But, I mean, again, that's kind of stuff that you could do in Uncharted 3. I don't know if you could actually throw items and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's the same type of gameplay. It's just, again, it's more prevalent.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
I'll probably end up having a very similar reaction to you because I've also played all the Uncharted games. And I like them all. I don't know that I was really ready for another one yet. And I didn't quite know that's what I was buying when this game went on sale.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you tell me, hey, there's a new Uncharted for $37 and, you know, it has different characters. So it's a little bit fresher in that way. I'd be like, okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Let's do that. So I did that, I guess. And, I'll maybe have something to say about it in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Why don't we spin around to James?
Yes. Why don't we do that? So I rushed home as best I could this afternoon because I wanted to go ahead and pick up Ace Attorney 5 so I could talk about it on the show.
You are a prince.
Well, I mean, it was, even if I wasn't on the show, I probably would have rushed home to get this game.
But you had the show in mind, at least.
I did. So I've been trying to jam through it. My objective was to finish the first case before the show because I've been through, depending on how you want to count it, 5 of these games. That first case is usually really short, but this time it's a bit more sprawling. So I'm at the point where they're just about to blow up the first case, so I'll have to work from there. So far, you know, it is what it is. An Ace Attorney game. It's been so long since we've had one, though, that it's kind of an exciting opportunity just to get to play it. It's been, what, I want to say like 4 or 5 years since the last one came out. It's been a really long time. If you don't count Investigations, I think Investigations was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So we haven't had one of these in a while.
Well, there were a ton of them in a very short period, and then...
Well, there were in the U.S., obviously, or in Western markets, because the games came out in Japan on the GBA. Japan actually had a pretty long run without getting anything but ports.
Oh, that's true. I'd actually forgotten that.
So the first 3 games were all GBA games. And they got upported. So Japan got the
first.
They
got upported again to Wii.
Yeah. In a questionable behavior at best. but very Capcomian behavior, to be fair. I have to admit, I was a little concerned Capcom was going to half-ass this.
Right. Like, is the original creator even working on this?
Shu Takumi is involved in the game. I don't know how actively. I don't think he was as involved in the Investigations games, but I believe they had him work on this relatively heavily. Of course, this would, I don't know that he's done anything since Ghost Trick, so this is probably all he's been working on.
Well, he's been working on Ghost Trick too, I hope.
And I think he's the main. I think he's the main guy behind Ace Attorney versus Professor Layton.
Oh, I mean, a lot of that's being done over at.
I thought Level 5 was the primary.
Level 5 is the engine on that game.
Oh, really? Okay. I thought he wrote the story.
Well, he co-wrote the story, but the story's been done for, like, they didn't do the dev work.
Oh, okay.
Level 5 has been doing the dev work.
Yeah.
Okay.
What this does do, though, is that I'm surprised to report that. Sad it's surprised. It's a company I adore. Capcom did not half-ass this game, at least from what I've seen so far.
The game looks slick.
This is like, so it does look really slick. I'm not sure it has any right to look this to
That's
come
what
off
I love about it. It's so outlandishly good looking.
Well, see, here's the thing.
Because the series almost has no graphics, you know?
I think what happened is, because effectively we've been playing GBA games the whole time, that they basically just jumped a generation and a half, and they're like, look what we can do! And if they hadn't done that, we'd be like, it looks okay. Mm-hmm. But instead they went and they bluffed us for a decade, and then dropped this on us, like, whoa, wow, this looks great. Basically, they sandbagged. They sandbagged for 10 years and then gave us this.
That's kind of how I feel about Pokemon, actually. But, yeah.
It's you know, so I've gotten through the gimmick of this game. And every time your assistant has some kind of gimmick, originally it was the Psylocke.
It's the mood matrix this time, right?
The mood matrix. it's getting pretty far out there on the weirdness scale in a game that it's a climactic case for its original three-story arc. Involved spirit mediums being possessed by other spirit mediums possessing third spirit mediums who were dead 10 years ago, because that game's fucking nuts. But it's like, so there's basically you get to watch certain testimony again and see what the person's quote heart is saying in terms of their mood, and you try to look for inconsistencies between what they're saying and how they're feeling. And then you sort of drill in on that. So, you know, somebody's talking about something really awful, but they are, like, they may be emoting fear or sadness, but at the same time, they emote something like happiness. You can go, well, why are they having some happy thoughts about this? And you can sort of drill in for more details. It's basically more like it's actually more akin to pressing versus previous games, which are more about finding the inconsistency.
I was going to say, it sounds a bit like the conversation upgrade in Deus Ex Human Revolution.
A bit, yeah.
Which I enjoyed, and I wish there was a lot more of it in that game.
It is a bit like that. To me, it's... Whereas in the past, a lot of times it's been you have to show evidence to do the little gimmick of that particular game. This time, it's much closer to when you have to know when to selectively press testimony. Because you're looking for things that don't really... Before, you'd look for, like, ticks on their face or something that doesn't really make sense. And you go, oh, that line right there. But in this game, it's much more like their reaction to it.
But do you still present evidence to...
Yeah. So it's...
In a way, it's similar to L.A. Noire as well. Of course, Phoenix Wright did it first.
Yeah. It's back to the normal style instead of the investigations, which was, you know, more of a blend of the court and the investigating part.
Mm.
This is straight-up court. Investigate, court, investigate.
Do you think
style.
It's too bad that they kind of took a step backward from the last game in the franchise?
I liked investigations, but I understand it bombed for them. I get that. And they probably had to be pretty retroactive just to make this game happen.
Yeah. Well, it's only download. That's probably part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved to have gotten the sequel to Investigations as well, but we didn't get that.
Right.
But it's... I actually like the normal format more, but it does make the on-foot stuff a lot more engaging when you have to actually use the evidence while you're doing it versus going, all right, let's go check this place now and see if somebody showed up.
Hmm.
I mean, I obviously enjoy these games a lot, so seeing this game looking as good as it does, you know, full motion, hand-animated video of characters talking with actual voices.
Oh, man, I can't wait to download this after we're done.
It's like, oh my god, wow, this is actually happening now.
Capcom, dramatically different than the last game you
Capcom
played.
Capcom stepped up to 2005. I'm in shock. It does feel like a nice primer for what we're going to get. I guess it's early next year with the
Versus?
Yeah. I want to say it's
is
early
that
next
actually
year.
Confirmed?
It is confirmed. It's confirmed for next year. I can't remember when it was though.
Hmm. Well, aren't they doing Layton 5 really or Layton 6 really really soon?
No, this year in Europe. We wait
oh, this
next year
in Europe. Oh, okay. Yeah. Because it's been a while since I played a Professor Layton.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd be down
if,
to jump
if they
into
were
that.
Following if they were following the schedule, one should be coming out right about now. Because
mm-hmm.
so, we were on that 5-year kick of Layton games, but we're not getting one right now. So
yeah, Layton for me is a lot like Pokemon. I want to play like maybe every second or third one of them.
See, Layton for me is I'm going to go ahead and reserve a weekend, get a hotel room. It and I
you
are going to hang
a
out.
Trance, and then you come out of it and you solved all 400 puzzles.
Pretty much. That's what those games are like.
Yeah.
Now, I realize that it's early in the game. It's still the first case, but does it feel like the case is not too... IGN actually said that it was too linear, but I choose to interpret this in a non-stupid way. The second, I think it was the second
too
Phoenix
linear.
Wright...
It's a fucking visual novel.
I know, but the second Phoenix Wright game... really annoyed me, and I think a lot of people, just because they seem to kind of delay the solving the case constantly. You know, like the answer was obvious, but they made you press on little details when you kind of like your mind already jumped to the conclusion a long time ago. Like it's obvious.
Well, I mean, a lot of the Ace Attorney games, I mean, they come right out and tell you who the guilty party is at the beginning.
Yeah, but I mean, so like sometimes they actually made you press on something that's really inconsequential.
So, yeah, a little bit. But I mean, my normal habit is to press on everything in part because I want to see what they're going to say. Like if you press on something really, really dumb,
right,
and the characters go off into this, you know, 5 or 6 line tangent about something stupid. Like to me, that's part of the joy of playing the game. Mm-hmm. I mean,
if you can just carpet bomb the touch screen to find out all the clues. Yeah. Like if you have to do that with every single case, that's kind of
no. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, obviously, you can't just present evidence on every slide. Go, present this one.
Yeah,
because you'll run out.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like the trauma team investigations. Like, I mean, once you've found,
they are totally inspired by Ace Attorney games.
Right, which are, you know, the best part about Trauma Team, in my opinion. I think that part's amazing, that mode. But basically, once you find everything there is worth finding, the game will kind of move you along and say, okay, we got what we need. Let's go back to court.
Yeah,
it's not like you're just kind of randomly, you know, poking.
Yeah, that's not really what I was thinking of, though. Sometimes
you kind of know who it is already, but everybody else is still being really
stupid. Yeah, and in the testimony, it's really like you wish that you could jump ahead and like point out that this person was not at this place at the time that they said they were, but you still have to prove that they were not wearing the shoes they claimed they were. You know,
it's akin to reading a mystery novel where you have a theory in advance about what really happened, but in order to find out if you were right, you still have to read the rest of the book.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that.
And that should be fun. That should be the reason you're doing it in the first place, not because you want to get it right at the end.
Yeah, right now, I mean, I know who the guilty party is, but there is still a sense of, because, I mean, they tell you at the beginning, he comes right out and says, you know, I did it.
Yeah. But I understand, Johnny, but at the same time, I think the second game was more, you felt more like what you were doing was pointless.
Hmm.
And you don't want that feeling.
The second game's biggest issue, really, is that it lacks a consistent narrative.
It had a really bad translation, didn't it? Or was that the first one?
They all did.
The first one?
They all did?
No. I think the second one is less compelling, but that's really, they had less to work with, too. Hmm. The first game, obviously, is all about the DH6 incident. So it's, you know, it runs, all the cases end up being connected. And even if you've solved this case in your head, there's still this nagging sense of how is this connected to everything else that you're trying to work out? And they do a good job unraveling that. The third game is a masterwork of just storytelling.
Yeah.
The second game is kind of, you're like, you get to the circus case and you're like, whatever, I don't really need this. but the last case of two is really amazing. But yeah, everything else is kind of like, oof. Like, I would say two probably has the best last case of the whole series, but three from end to end is just unbelievable.
Right.
Four for me is really the low point in the series. But I think I'm just happy with just this flashiness. I'll be able to get through the first two cases tonight.
You really liked Apollo Justice too, didn't you?
I did, but I mean, for me, it doesn't live up to the other three.
Oh, okay.
I think that's more because I don't like Apollo as a character.
Oh, is he? Are you okay with him being in Ace Attorney 5?
Well, right now he's unconscious, so I'm okay. That's not really a spoiler. It happens right at the beginning.
If he wakes up, like, just smack him with the piece of wood again, and
it's fine. It was a rock, but you're like, I'm like, all right, I can deal with this. See you later, Apollo. I mean, he's around, but I don't think he's going to be around that much. Oh, okay. I think he's going to pop in and pop out.
It was more of a cameo then.
I had read that he
was more like another sidekick. Like, he was kind of pretty prominent.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting the vibe is. He's going to be hanging around sort of as the third wheel.
Mm. Okay.
But that's fine. I could deal with that.
Kind of like the Gumshoe in the first game, maybe.
Yeah, probably, except Gumshoe's probably in it, too.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, it is. I mean, just from a presentation standpoint, it's gorgeous. Mm. I mean, visually, it's gorgeous. The hand-drawn stuff looks really, really good. The models are really, really well animated.
Probably the best looking 3DS game I saw at E3.
The little nervous ticks they have, like, you could pick up on them. Before, you know, it'd be like 3 frames of animation, but now it's, you know, everything's constantly moving. The court is animated. The people behind them are actually drawn this time, versus just being a shadow.
Yeah.
You know, it does these sweeping pans of the courtroom when things are happening. I mean, it's very much more cinematic than it previously was. Which is weird, because really it's a game that lives and dies by its words. I mean, it's just words, 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 words.
Right.
So putting that much effort into the presentation is a gratifying experience for me, because I was fully convinced Capcom was not going to do it.
Oh, man. Could this challenge Fire Emblem for your game of the year?
Oh, God. Well, Fire Emblem's so long ago,
too. You seem in love with this, though.
Well, it's an Ace Attorney game. I mean...
Exactly.
I mean, I didn't sleep when the first Ace Attorney game came out. I'm not joking. I mean, I literally didn't sleep the first night.
Holy shit.
I just marathoned that game. And, yeah, I mean, it's just been... I think it has the advantage of it's been so long since I got an Ace Attorney game that I'm just happy to have it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a series that I would marathon through, like, one after the other. You do get burned out. Sometimes by the end of the fifth case, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really depends on how that game broke them up. And they are such... I mean, they're the same game, but they're so different.
Yeah.
Because they are ultimately books. I mean, really. Mm-hmm. So, you know, authors have bad books. Everybody's got one.
It happens.
So for you, James, it's not really about, you know, the mechanics or what new little power-up they add. It's all about, I want that new story.
I want that new story. I like the courtroom gameplay, mm-hmm. which is why... Investigations works out really well for me, because you're constantly going through your evidence and trying to come up with logical contradictions. But I want that experience, and a big part of that experience for me, the core part really, is that story.
Yeah.
And they're not always logical. They're never logical. they're usually bonkers, go nuts, like almost late. Like, they're just,
they have
like
their them own being King's with Quest kind of logic, though, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, there's an internal logic for the world that is consistent from game to game.
Right. Right.
And if you can accept that, then, you know, Ace Attorney 3, which is where the game gets super nuts, is okay. Like, it's sort of a grand crescendo of the insanity.
And Layton does the same thing, right?
But Layton's just completely just decided, no, fuck it, we're going crazy now. I mean, like, Layton 2. I still can't reveal the twist on that one, but I remember dropping it going, no, no, that is just too far. Fuck you, game. Fuck you. Oh, I was actually mad at the game for just the sheer lack of anything that they thought put into the end of that story. Like, no, it's fine. We'll just hand wave everything away. It's good. Oh my God, that game.
All right. Well, why don't I wrap up new business with one more game? I want to talk about Volgar the Viking. I got a code for this from a friend of the show, Chris Johnson, over at Player One Podcast, and it's published by Adult Swim, but the game actually was kickstarted on its own, and I think Adult Swim came in pretty late in the process and basically helped get it out to a wider audience, and so it's not really funny like a lot of the internally developed Adult Swim games are, but you know, it does have kind of a similar vibe to theirs in terms of it being pretty much like a retro, like a faux retro game, being really difficult, having leaderboards, and it just has a really nice style to it. And The funny thing about Volgar the Viking, I didn't think this would ever happen, but it's basically a sequel to ActRaiser 2.
Bizarre.
So, oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's a... It's an incredibly difficult, very straightforward, simple 2D action platformer game. And, you know, it's maybe not the most distinguished game. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have a lot of crazy mechanics that set it apart. It does have this nice spear thing. You can throw spears in the wall and jump up on them. But mostly the thing that sets it apart from a lot of other 2D games that you might have played, it's brutally difficult. I've survived, like, I think less than 5 minutes on every playthrough I've gone so far. And the game has all this, it has like a special UI set up for speed runs, and they have a leaderboard for speed runs. I would be impressed just watching someone play through this game successfully at all, regardless of how fast they do it. It's just that difficult. So I don't know if I'll ever really see that much of it outside of YouTube. Or Giant Bomb, because they've been doing a couple of videos with Brad Shoemaker over there. But man, I respect it so much, and I'm so impressed by it, and I'm amazed that might be one of the most difficult 2D platformers I've played in many, many years. And it's very slow and laborious. It's like, it's very deliberately designed to be an asshole to you, you know, very much like Ninja Gaiden 2 or whatever. So, if you dig that kind of thing and you want to like memorize the patterns, it's a kind of action game where there is not only just a right way to play it, there's almost like an exact perfect, combination of inputs that you could use to play the game. Like
Ninja Gaiden 2. That's literally exactly what we said about that game.
Right, yeah. You could almost like write down like on a musical score all the inputs to play this game and then give it to someone and then they do it and they put it in and they beat the game. It's that exact, the way that the enemies approach you and the platforms are placed.
Yeah, the preview for the game, the trailer for the game is actually pretty clever because it begins by showing you Volgar just dying in impossible situations. You're looking at it and it's just, how the hell was he supposed to get out of that?
Exactly.
And then eventually they show you someone actually playing through those sections, you know, and it's impressive as hell just in the trailer. So I can imagine, you know, the feeling that you must get actually pulling it off yourself.
But their trailer is basically like a Super Play video that you'd get from Nintendo with some crazy person playing Super Mario Brothers.
I don't know if watching the trailer actually helps you. It's just
impressive. That's the thing. Yeah. Like watching someone play this game and beat it would be about as impressive as like watching those Ikaruga videos, you know, on the last level. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's much less busy, but if you actually know how the game is played, just as impressive, I think. So I found it very interesting. I'm absolutely terrible at it, and I think probably most people will be, but you know, it's pretty cool, and it's very affordable on Steam, so you might want to check that out. All right, well, that is going to wrap up new business, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear all about Guillaume's visit to Nintendo to play 2DS and a whole bunch of Wii U games coming out the rest of the year, and we might also get to a couple of emails, so stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
All right, first up this week we have a review for Sonic Lost World on the Wii U by Jared Rosenberg. Look, Sega's going to keep making Sonic games and there's nothing you can do about it. Is it advisable? No, of course not. Do they care? Are you gonna pay to have the mail for the North American division forwarded to Europe? Oh, God. Turns out Jared thinks you should consider making an offering, at least for Lost World. I wouldn't dare insinuate someone is willing to validate all Sonic's recent efforts. All right, and next up we have a review for Deus Ex Human Revolution Director's Cut on the Wii U, finally, by Curtis Bonds. Remember when this game was announced many lunar phases ago? Well, now it's out as new content for your Wii U, time traveling to your home from 2011. Curtis, unconcerned with time's linear motion, found out what we have all known. Deus Ex Human Revolution is a damn fine game.
I'm told there's been an editorial called How Nintendo Does Freemium Games by Minoru Yamazumi. Have you heard of the Daramechi Sports Shop? It's doubtful, unless you're either living in Japan or deeply in tune with the world of Dalmatian Human Hyper Digital Sports Shop owners. Daramechi Sports Shop is a, quote, free minigame collection A WarioWare does Wii Sports Baseball, where you buy the games from a real-life virtual store keep using real-world currency and actual negotiating. Seriously, no chance this game leaves Japan, but if you're curious what the House of Mario does with freemium, this should be enlightening. We've also got impressions for Scram Kitty and his buddies on Rails from the Wii U eShop by Don Koopman. Well, now we meet again Mr. Kitty, 4 months after his first hands-on with this psychotic-sounding 2D platformer. Don got another go at rescuing kittens and is hooked.
We have a review for Star Wars Pinball for the 3DS by Josh Max. I'm really glad LucasArts isn't around anymore, lest someone attempt to produce some big-budget, grand idea, or otherwise creative Star Wars property. Let us all rejoice in the force that we still get triumphant experiences like Star Wars Pinball. And just like playing electronic pinball without the flash and tactile experiences of an actual pinball machine, Star Wars Pinball is electronic pinball without the flash and tactile experiences of an actual pinball machine. And finally, we have a feature, Hudson's Ashes, A Tale of Andy Cube's Party Past by Neil. Did you know that there are two party games coming out for the next few months, both from obscure game trivia answer NDQ? Neil explores the history of Nintendo's fully owned Last Refuge for Swiss Family Hudson Soft.
Nice. All right, well, there's obviously a lot of stuff going up, a lot of features, editorials, and review season is kicking off, and you need to make sure you check it out every day over at NintendoWorldReport.com.
I really don't know what I'm doing here.
Welcome back, everyone. Unfortunately, John had to run, but we're very glad he was able to join for the first segment, and hopefully we will hear more from him next week. But for right now, we are actually going to have a little bit of a special holiday preview, or as I call it, a holiday Gee-view.
No.
With Mr. Guillaume.
No. Yet. No.
I do not approve.
No. So
what's the nature of this event, really quickly, Gee?
It was just Nintendo of Canada previewing their holiday games. So they're all basic. They were mostly demos that I had played before at E3 and, at E3 or at PAX.
Did you actually go to Nintendo of Canada to do this?
No, they were, you know, like they've got a branch in Montreal. There's a lot of events going on, actually. Ah. Like there was something for Pokemon. I did not go. There was something after E3. Like I actually could choose not to go to E3 and just stay in Montreal. And then like 20 days later, the demos would just come to me.
Right. So at least the Nintendo ones, not necessarily all the third parties.
So. Yeah, maybe a selection of third parties. But not all of them.
It's still pretty cool that they do that. It's very smart.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that they're the same demos. Like in the case of the demos that were updated, I think they were the same demos that some journalists in San Francisco got to play maybe a couple of weeks ago. You know, like I'm a couple of weeks behind game journalists in New York and San Fran. But anyway. Right. I got to play, of the demos that were new, Super Mario 3D World was definitely the one that I, immediately went to. And, they had four new levels. So that was pretty cool. Like levels that we did not touch at E3.
A lot of power-ups too, right?
A lot of power-ups. So I did get to play the level with the double cherries. If you've been watching the new previews and things like that, there's a new power up, the double cherry, which, you know, gives you a second Mario or Peach or Toad, that just runs along with the first one. And then you can get multiple cherries like that, and you can have up to five characters at once.
It really is like the orange dudes in Ninja Gaiden 2.
No. No, because the orange dudes follow your movements after you've done them. And right. In this case...
They're like options in Gradius.
Actually, Mario would be more like the options in Gradius. I mean, oh no, okay.
You're
no,
more
in
like
the first
options in Gradius.
In the first Gradius, yes. Like, the options kind of, yeah, like, they are where you
they
were.
They just follow you.
We've alienated everyone listening to this show younger than 27.
Well, anyway.
I'm okay with that.
In this case, like, you get a group of Marios, let's say, and they all jump at the same time, and they all, if you press up, they all go up at the same time. So, technically, they should stay in a group. You should have your herd of compact herd of Marios that you can control very, very easily, except that the design of the level really wanted to mess with you. And they made it so that there's different elevations, there's different obstacles that made it so that much more easily than I would have expected, my Marios were scattered all over the place.
It's Kirby Mass Attack.
I guess, but like with direct control this time, you know, you're not just flicking anything. Like it's really weird. Like at a certain point, I wasn't sure what I was doing anymore. You know, I was jumping and only half my Marios were jumping and the other half were already in the air when I pressed the button.
It's like fluidity with Marios.
Oh,
anyway,
I'm going to throw up.
And, you know, so it was
sick all over this laptop.
So it was really hard to keep track of where everyone was at any one time. And you grab a fire flower and they all get the power up. So you can start shooting all over the place. It's really like it was just fun mashing the button and take out large groups of enemies all at once, you know. So that was pretty cool. And at some point there was like towards the end of the level, there were three pipes going up. And you didn't see where they led. And only the rightmost pipe led to the rest of the stage. And the other two pipes were actually the same pipe that, you know, curved back down. So, but you had basically no choice but to have some of your Marios take the wrong pipes. So again, like they were completely split up and I was just, you know, scratching my head trying to get them all at the same spot. It was pretty cool. Eventually, you find like a corner to just get them all in, to squeeze them all in, and then you get a compact bunch again, and things are going much more smoothly at that point.
That sounds almost like the new 3DS Mario vs. Donkey Kong game. You've got Mario's going on a path, and you kind of have to figure out how to manipulate them to
get all to the other feel, side. The feel is so different when you have direct control, you know? Like it was pretty cool. I liked it.
Awesome.
And another level that I got to play, perhaps you've seen it in the previews again, is the one where there's, you know, different shadows on the walls. Like, you are in a fortress-like environment. And for most of the level, you do see your characters and you can move in 3D space, but there are sections of the level where you only see the shadows projected on the wall. And there are some simple level puzzles that you have to solve. At some point, there was some collectible that is in the middle of a solid mass, you know, and you have to figure out that you have to drop down next to that mass and roll into it, because it turns out that these are shadows of brick blocks, and you can smash through them and get the power up. In that level, also, I got to get the piranha plant power up. There's like this flower pot that you can just pick up with a sleeping piranha plant inside of it, and so it wakes up when you pick it up. And from then on, everything that you're facing is just gonna go and grab and eat very, very rapidly.
It's so, like an auto Yoshi.
Yeah, and it's very, very fast. It's very cool. Like you'll have a string of those. You know, black, the fuzzies, I think they're called. Those black things that are
touch fuzzy, get dizzy fuzzies?
No, the Super Mario World fuzzies. Anyway, like they're black and they've got this really crazy face, you know, and they're mostly invincible.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a whole line of them, and, you know, it's going to grab five of them, one after the other, glup, 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 and it's pretty cool.
Sounds almost like Pac-Man Championship Edition DX.
So many analogies being made. Sorry. I guess, but
take that, young people.
That's a fairly recent game.
Yeah, sure.
It's fine.
Yeah. The problem with the Piranha Plant though is that as soon as you, or perhaps the fun of it is as soon as you turn towards your teammates, it's going to snap at them too. It's not going to hurt them. Like, they're not going to lose their power ups, but they will get knocked back. and there are pits in the level, so you could very easily screw with them and push them into pits and annoy them that way. And of course, you can, with that piranha plant, it's also an opportunity to grab power-ups before anyone else, because it's going to grab that as well and give them to you. So it's a great opportunity to make more points and, to be a dick. There's in that level, there was also a kind of a 3D land, Super Mario 3D land puzzle room. If you remember, you could in 3D Land get through certain pipes, and then you would come into these very small rooms where it would play tricks with, the point of view tricks. You know, it would look.
Those reminded me of Super Mario RPG, because it had a few rooms that did that.
Yeah. Because, like, you would have something that looked like a straight line, but if you turned on the 3D effect in 3D Land, you would realize that some of those blocks were higher than the others, and that's how you managed to reach the star coin. Well, in this game, you don't have a 3D effect, but in that particular level, there you could press a switch, and that turned on some light, which shone and projected, the shadow on a wall, and you could see that the stairs that you climbed to get to the switch, under them was something that you couldn't see before. So that was pretty cool. Yeah. So another level that I played was the first fortress. I barely remember the fortress. It was not that exciting, I guess. There were a lot of lava everywhere, and there were a lot of bombs, kind of these soccer ball looking bombs that you could bump into and kick into different brick blocks to reveal passages or things like that. But overall, the level really didn't stick with me. I had to check YouTube to remember if I had actually played through that level. And but at the end of it, you do fight Bowser, who's on his car, on the hood of his new car.
You're chasing him?
Yeah, you're chasing him into the screen, and he's going to alternate between throwing bombs at you that you kick back, and that's how you hurt him, or shooting fireballs at you, and that's how he hurts you. it was pretty cool. Like, as far as boss battles go in Mario games, I definitely like that type of thing more than just jump on the head three times.
It's almost like a reversal from the final boss battle or boss stage in 3D Land, where he's chasing you.
Yeah, maybe, in a way. You could say that. And it's more platforming-based than most boss battles in Mario games are, and that's how I like it. So
Yeah,
it was pretty good. Overall, like I did try a fourth level that I absolutely cannot remember. So again, it just didn't stick with me. They chose all of the levels were in the first two worlds. So all of the wacky, really wacky stuff that you see in the trailers, I did not see much of that. There was at one point I did get to play level 1-1, which I wasn't supposed to, but thankfully the poorly trained Nintendo reps there
were executed. For their transgressions.
Oh, I hope so.
Their blood's on your hands!
Yeah, but I got to play with the Mega Mushroom, which...
Their deaths are all worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeez.
And the Mega Mushroom...
How do you sleep at night, sir?
And the Mega Mushroom works exactly like it does in the new Super Mario Brothers games. You become gigantic and you just... walk through all the obstacles and kick them out of your way. Like, you destroy everything.
It's almost like a cutscene, right? I mean, there's so little... You just kind of plow through everything, so you don't really have to jump. You don't really have to plan what you're doing at all. You just go until it runs out, and then...
Yeah, and unfortunately, I was playing by myself in that level, but I can imagine that if you had four people who are all gigantic, it could get quite messy and quite fun, you know, just knock each other out of the way and try to score the most points possible. And it could have been more fun than it was just, you know, by myself. The payoff, though, was that I walked on some bricks again, which just gave under my weight. And that's how I got one of those green stars that replaced the star coins in this game. There's three green stars in every level. And sometimes they're hidden. Sometimes you've got some sort of, little puzzle to solve. And you know, you collect them because they're there and it's a Mario game, so you collect stuff.
That's right. That sounds great, man. So you're do you feel more confident that this is going to like work out pretty well as a single player game?
I'm not sure. I played mostly. I think I'm more confident that it's going to be fun with multiple people.
Oh.
Because at E3, I was just, you know, it was hard to enjoy the game for what it was, because you're always kind of paired with other people who would get in your way. This time at this event, you could actually bring, you know, friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, playing with people I knew, and that made it really, really fun. And we did try to get competitive, getting to the level with the at the end of the level with the most points, and it was pretty cool. I think it's going to be a fun party game. As far as the single player goes, it feels very much like an expanded version of 3D Land. I guess it should be obvious just from the title, but because of the timer and because of, you know, there's so many other similarities, it doesn't feel like it's the sprawling adventure of Super Mario Galaxy.
Right.
You're trying to get from point A to point B. And you're trying to go as fast as possible to compete with these other people. So it's kind of a you know, a hybrid of New Super Mario Brothers and 3D Land. And it's pretty cool that way.
Awesome, dude. Mm-hmm. All right, so how about another game that's not out for a little while? How about We Fit You?
Yeah, I got to try maybe three of the balance minigames that they have. So the first of them was the bobsled, and because I always thought it looked cool, so I wanted to try it. And it is pretty cool, but it is so hard on the abs. Like, you have to bend backwards so far and, you know, still kind of look at the TV screen, and you're almost horizontal. It's kind of like doing the plank, you know, but in reverse. And so eventually I was just shaking on the Wii balance board, and eventually I was, okay, I'm going to put my hands on the floor. I'm going to cheat because this is too hard and I'm looking like a fool. And it was pretty cool. It was, you know, like you tilt left, you tilt right, then you're trying to go as fast as possible. And I hope, I did not ask, I forgot, but I hope that you can, you know, compete for high scores and for time attacks with other people online.
I mean, you should definitely be able to do that locally, just like in the ski events in the first game. And really pretty much all the balance games had local leaderboards. But yeah, I'm with you. I would really like this to be tied into the friends list for online leaderboards. And I guess we still don't really know about that yet.
Yeah. The second game that I played was some simple tennis game where you hit the ball against the wall. But there were these different colors, like there were these segments of the wall that were different colors, and depending on where you send it, these blocks, these almost Tetris-like blocks, would disappear, and other would fall down and replace them. And there was some strategy for that, for scoring as many points as you could, but I did not really figure it out. It's a really hard game to explain. You could also, like, you had to move your character from left to right depending on where the ball was going to be, but it was really strange. You had it would highlight the spot where your feet were supposed to be, and all you had to do to get your character to move there is walk in place. You know, initially I thought, okay, I'm going to have to tilt left because I'm supposed to be on the left, and that didn't work. And, you know, I was very confused, but you just basically, you know, step in place a little bit, and the character is going to walk there. And if you step too much, the character is still going to be there. Like, it was very, very basic and a little bit disappointing. And a kind of similar game was, had you hold the gamepad horizontally, and you're, again, on the Wii balance board, and the premise of the game was that you're in a party and you're serving people desserts. And you have to, your gamepad is the tray of food, and you have to bring the tray of food to people without, you know, spilling what you have on it. And to get to the people, you have to step in place on the Wii balance board again. So it was kind of fun. You had to, you know, be kind of methodical in the way that you moved around people. And, you know, some desserts were more round than others, so they would fall off easily. So I kind of had fun. But all three games had
you don't
me
sound that enthusiastic.
Yeah,
do you?
Well, all three games, you know, like I think I need to spend more time with them, and thankfully the game is going to be free for a month in November, right? Like as soon as you download it the first time or you play it the first time, everyone who has a balance board is going to be able to play it for free for a month.
So then if you want to continue playing it after that, they'll charge you?
Yeah.
Is that the way it
works? Yeah, you'll need to buy the kind of Poke Walker thing, except it's not a Poke Walker, it's a Wii Fit.
Fit meter, yeah.
When you plug it in, does it laugh at you for having a balance board, or is that just implicit?
But that's the thing. They didn't have the Fit meter over there.
You don't plug it in. I think it's wireless, but I don't understand why they can't use the 3DS.
It uses the infrared.
3DS has infrared.
Using the infrared is a terrible idea.
Yeah, I know. You're going to have to hold the little pedometer thing
all right,
to your
stand
gamepad.
Stand perfectly still while you use this pedometer. Mm.
But anyway, my point is that like no matter what my impressions of the games from that event are, the thing is, I think everyone is going to have a good idea of whether or not they want this upgrade after spending a month with it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Like, I want to see if the games hold up to repeated play. And what was a little bit disappointing is that I did get a glimpse of the different menus, and there's a lot of returning games. If you like them, that's awesome. But there's, you know, like, I do have my doubts as to how much actually new content there is in there.
It does kind of sound like Wii Fit Plus Plus. Like, it's not really like a huge new sequel built from the ground up for Wii U or anything like that.
Yeah. At the same time, I guess the cost is right. You know, $20.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to get excited about it.
Hmm. Okay. Fair enough. And I know you played Wii Party U, but that's actually coming out really soon, and you'll probably be talking about that plenty. Mm-hmm. So anything to say about Mario Party 3DS?
Unfortunately, the demo was really bad because the guy, I think he must have been replacing the other guy on his lunch break or something. All the units were tethered to this table. He made us play games that were really ill-suited for the type of event that this was. The first game that he had us play was everyone has to imitate a Nintendo character. So a Boo showed up, and we had to hold the DS's to our ears and listen to his little laugh. And then we had to try and, you know, like in the microphone, try to replicate it. But the room was so noisy that there was absolutely no way that we could hear it. And there was no way that we could actually, that the mic would actually pick us up and not everything else going around us. So I don't know what they were thinking. It seems like a cool idea for a game, but if you're all standing next to each other, like, and we all had to speak in the microphones at the same time, that seems really ill-conceived to me. I feel like probably there must be, like, it must be picking up all the noises from the other people as well. So I don't see how the game could really work in any setting. And another game that he had us play was an AR-based game. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember AR cards. Remember those things?
I found some.
I mean, it's up there with like Nintendo Video for my most used 3DS apps.
Nintendo Video is actually the worst thing ever invented.
I deleted that stuff long ago.
Hold on. We're going to download these new videos you don't want to watch.
Oh, good. More Dinosaur Office.
Yeah.
Just what I needed.
Dinosaur Office 3D. Fuck you very much, sir.
So yeah, the minigame in question had this tower that was coming out of the table, and you had to climb the tower with your character, except that and lava was rising from the bottom constantly. So you have to, you know, stay out of the lava's way, and the tower would have different obstacles showing up from time to time. But the game was really slow. The tower would build, like pieces of the tower would fall from the sky and build it up that way. But the pieces were really slow in coming. And the main challenge was that eventually there would be obstacles, like you would get kind of a roof over you, like you would get a piece of tower that would prevent you from climbing up, and you had to go around it. And to go around it, like to see what you were doing, you had to move around the table, you know, like because it's all AR based, you had to be on the right side of the table to be able to see what you were doing. So I guess the fun was supposed to come out of, you know, come from the fact that we would all have to compete, like to push each other out of the way to get a good view of the action and keep playing. Except that all the 3DSs were tethered to the middle of the table, and just moving around was like a real pain in the ass. So yeah, I did not have too much fun playing Mario Party.
Yeah, that's, and you're not even necessarily like down on the game itself, but just the parts that you played definitely were not just suited to the event.
Yeah, and there was one game that's more traditional that had the characters jump over hurdles and you had to time the jumps. But again, that's not the most exciting thing in the world.
No, so, do you think this is a game that you, I mean, would have been interested in anyway, though?
I'm not a Mario Party guy. Maybe I haven't found the right people to play with. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see it being really fun, but like, you know, it's one thing to have a console Mario Party game where I can probably pile together a few people, you know, maybe they're not really big avid video gamers, but we're watching a movie or something and maybe we play a little bit of that afterward. But with a 3DS game, it's like, when am I ever around three or four other people with a 3DS? Like maybe twice a year at some kind of gaming event like PAX or E3. But outside of that, I just don't know when I would ever get to play it, even though you only need one copy of the game still.
Yeah, and I actually got to play Mario Party DS once with two other people, and it was pretty fun. Like, it is nice to be able to all sit on different couches all over a room and just, like, you have your own view of the action. And everything, it was a little bit faster because two people could do two different things at once. You know, mm-hmm. like while someone was choosing a minigame, someone else was rolling the dice or something. I don't know if I'm remembering that right. But anyway, yeah. Like I remember it speeding things up a little bit.
Yeah, I get the appeal of a portable Mario Party. It's just it doesn't fit my lifestyle, I guess. But, you know, if you're maybe for younger people, especially who maybe all their friends have 3DSs and they take them around to school, you know, maybe play on the school bus. I mean, that sounds really appealing. It's just I don't have any kind of situation like that.
Yeah. And Johnny, I know you were excited to hear about my 2DS impressions. That's what I played Mario Party on. But unfortunately, the setting, again, was not ideal because it was tethered with these really heavy cables. So yeah. the thing was really, really heavy. And you could not really flip it around and look at it from every angle. I did think that the screen was pretty damn small because I'm now used to the XL. I don't think I would want to go back to a screen that size.
I mean, it is the normal...
Yeah.
3DS screen. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you're used to the 3DS screen, it probably wasn't as jarring. And other than that, the shoulder buttons were really weird. You know, they didn't have a whole lot of give to them, but they were really...
A lot
really...
of people seem to really like them after they, you know, they get the system home and play with it for a while. People seem to really enjoy those.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. My initial impression was that, like, wow, I have the most... I have the 2DS that has had the most use ever. Like, it felt like this was a really, really old unit and that it was kind of falling apart. the shoulder buttons were really, like, they felt loose. Yeah, I did not really enjoy the experience.
You know, you say that, but it probably was a demo unit that's been at a bunch of different events. I mean, it probably has been really heavily used.
True.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
Hard to judge by that.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thanks for, you know, keeping us abreast of all the stuff coming out here in a couple of weeks and a couple of months before the end of the year. And, you know, sounds like you played some stuff you really liked and some stuff you weren't that crazy about. I mean, I guess maybe it would be appropriate to ask you how you feel about the overall holiday lineup, at least for the remainder of this year, based on what you've seen, because, you know, you've seen a lot more of it than we have.
I did manage to check off my list a couple of games that I don't want anymore. Sonic Lost World, you know, we thought it was iffy kind of at the E3. There was one more level that you could play, and the casino based level, and it just seemed even more poorly thought out than
I thought it was iffy when I heard the word Sonic.
Yeah, no, but I actually, you know, at E3, I did play Sonic Colors at TYP's house, and it was actually fun. I had a great time, and that's what made me look forward to this game. And it's just...
That's how they get you.
It's really, really janky, and they should not make any casino-based levels in Sonic ever again. They never seem to work, and they always stick the spinball table That's
it's
not
really
fun.
Irritating.
It is. And the physics don't lend themselves. Man. Yeah. The physics
are
terrible.
The best part about this is Guillaume expecting companies like Sega to learn lessons.
Yeah.
It's so cute. It's like he expects them to actually go, yeah, that didn't work.
Well, it was okay. I'll say this. It was better than Sonic Adventure.
Well, great. Yeah. It's better than a 13-year-old game. A 14-year-old game. Perfect.
But yeah, no, I'm still very excited. I'm getting Wii Party U. I'm definitely getting 3D World. Zelda, unfortunately, it was the same. Linked Between Worlds was the same demo, so my opinion hasn't changed. It's still positive. I'm still getting that, that's for sure.
Just, and you may have mentioned this, I may have missed it. What was the real target audience for this event?
Oh, it was families. You know, like,
yeah, okay.
They were specifically asking an invite to bring your kids. And
did you bring your kids?
No, I did not find any kids under such short notice to bring you.
Borrow kids. Yeah.
There's a service I think you can call.
Santa was there. Princess Peach was there. So yeah, I can figure out who the target audience was.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. So yeah, reusing the demos makes a lot of sense then.
So was this a press event?
Yeah, it was. It was. They just wanted to showcase their holiday events.
But you know, but see, here's the thing. It's a press event, but it probably wasn't a gaming press event.
Like mommy bloggers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, all the people I saw there were you know, gamers. They were all people from sites about games. Or,
oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm surprised.
There was one guy who does the game reviews for the paper. Yeah, so like they were all games people, and okay. It's just like, what better way is there to show Wii Party U than have you play it with your kids? Like that's probably the optimal experience that you're gonna get, right?
Drunk.
Yeah, they were not serving booze.
That's the better experience.
Yeah, I know, but you know, like they were really they. Yeah, their lineup is targeting families, so I think it was pretty smart of them to tell people, okay, bring your kids, bring your husband or your wife, and come play Wii U, Wii Party U.
Mm. All right, so why don't we move on then to listener mail? I think we've got time maybe for a couple of these. And as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I'll read the first one. It's from Buttle. He writes, to keep it short, I'll just say that I've played a lot of great games and I'm looking forward to what's still coming. But I wonder if it's that these games are just perfect for me and another Nintendo gamer would be a little less pleased. And maybe they'll have their year in the future when I'll be a little less happy. And for a final thought and question, do you think off-screen play will be a staple for Nintendo here on out? Would you be willing to go back?
So I assume the games he's talking about, I assume this email got truncated, right?
Yeah, sorry. It was
a
long
email. Yeah, I assume the games
email,
he's talking about are the ones that came out this year for Wii U.
Right. So he's saying basically he's really happy with the 2013 Wii U lineup, but he's trying to be sympathetic to people who maybe this isn't what they were hoping for.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not been where I want it to be. I mean, I'm not a big Pikmin fan. Wonderful 101. I was, you know, it's okay. I enjoy it, but it's not great.
Yeah.
In
general, I found that Nintendo fans are not the homogeneous group that some people think they are.
I think there are certain elements of the fan base that are relatively consistent compared to other consoles. But yeah, I mean there is obviously diversity in opinion. I mean that's
absolutely. I mean, we just last week read an email from someone who doesn't like the 3D Mario games.
Indeed.
I did. That was the thing that happened.
I still can't believe it.
You can go listen to it on last week's episode if you didn't listen. Yeah, I can see where he's coming from, and I appreciate the word of, hey, it's okay, you'll have your time, and I will when X comes out. It's just like, I almost wished I didn't know that game existed, because now I'm like, it's like everything else is went from being, oh, that's cool, to being, that's not X.
Well, next year we may get X and Smash Brothers, which will make it a pretty damn good year for me. And we'll definitely have Mario Kart 2, which I hold some hope for being really interesting.
Yeah,
I've had a pretty good year, but even though, you know, I love Mario, I do hope that people who are a little bit fed up with Mario games do get their year very soon. Because
we've had a lot of Mario games lately.
Oh, yeah.
And it's too many. There should not be another Mario game for at least 3 years, another platformer. Like,
there will be, but yeah.
That's not happening, James.
There shouldn't be, not... There won't be.
Right.
But to the point of the actual question, Do you think off-screen play will be a staple for Nintendo from here on out? I mean, I don't know. I don't see any reason for them to ditch it short of changing the Wii U hardware.
No, but I think maybe he means in future consoles. Like, do we want this new feature to stay?
That's what I'm thinking about. And like, could a future Nintendo handheld actually support that the way that Sony's doing with Vita and PS4?
It really depends on what Nintendo's next strategy is for their handhelds. I really don't know what the next handheld up will look like.
I kind of subscribe to the theory that, you know, within 5 years, probably Nintendo kind of goes to a unified console and handheld, whether it's a docking station or it's just the one piece and you can play it.
Oh, God, you're making me think of that Neo Geo abortion.
I'm thinking more like maybe roughly the size of an iPad, but with physical controls, and that is the Nintendo system.
Yeah.
And it plays console-style games, and you can easily hook it up to a TV, but every single game is portable. That's kind of where I'm feeling like it's going. So in that case, I mean, portables are by definition off-screen play, so they're off-TV play.
A tablet isn't as portable as a current handheld.
No, it's definitely not. And, you know, and that's probably the one major argument against this happening as well. I guess there's also the theory that they don't want to give up the additional revenue stream.
Oh, God, no.
Console give them a different place to kind of play around with different creative as well as business ideas and figure out something that works.
And it lets them leverage one against the other, too. If one's one's having a light year, they can really push the other one.
And Nintendo, more than other companies, probably has a devoted fan base who will buy every system they release, you know, regardless.
Yeah, we're idiots. I mean, we'll just do it. Let's go. I mean, everybody on the call right now bought a Wii U within a week of its launch. For what?
I also just pre-ordered a PS4, so I'm clearly clinically insane.
Oh, it's good. You can save money by having no games to buy for it.
Right. Well, that'll help. Yeah. It'll keep me from getting overwhelmed this season, this holiday season.
The thing is, if you could imagine Nintendo keeping the screen in, kind of to try to keep the continuity between Wii U and the next console, and have some sort of perhaps retrocompatibility. Except that
maybe it's an attachment on whatever the new controller is.
Oh, jeez!
Snap it in.
I want there to be. I want the next console to support Wii remotes. The gamepad and a whole other controller.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if the next console...
I want 48 devices to go with my next Nintendo console. I want a whole floor just littered in Nintendo shit.
But that's the thing. Like, if the next console is a some sort of handheld and console hybrid, I think Nintendo would have to say goodbye to motion controls. No?
The 3DS has motion controls.
Yeah. It doesn't use them very much, but...
Yeah, but I mean, like, if we're thinking about backwards compatibility and stuff like that, like, you would have to use Wii modes for so many games.
I don't know if they'd be super concerned about the backwards compatibility if they're going to go and completely unify their product line. I think at that point, backwards compatibility may become less of a concern, because now they're really only pushing one product line, and it can be very difficult to make everything sort of synergize back down to that perspective. I will say, though, that the idea of a unified system, to me, a unified handheld-based system, because really what we're describing is it's a handheld that you can play on your TV.
Right. So it support. I mean, well, the idea being that it's powerful enough in whatever way they can figure out. It's powerful enough to play, you know, what we would now consider modern console games. So, you know, which, I mean, you know, like, for instance, the iPad is... You know, not very many really ambitious games designed for that platform, I would argue, in the sense of, you know, technological superiority or, you know, really long-term deep gameplay design the way that most of us would want. But it's very powerful, you know, and if the market existed for those kinds of games on that platform, I think it could run some really impressive stuff. You know, I mean, you just look at the XCOM Enemy Unknown version that they just released. It's amazing to me that that game can exist on a tablet, you know. So... I could see Nintendo going that way. I mean, the technology is definitely getting to the point where they can put up some pretty legitimate console-style games on a portable if they're willing to, you know, charge $200 or $300 for it, which clearly they are.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the downside for them is now they make a lot of money, and I was kind of alluding to it earlier. They make a lot of money on accessory sales.
Well, true.
It could be a lot harder.
So does Apple.
Yeah, but they don't do stuff like, you need to buy four Wii remotes, have fun with that. It'd be difficult. I think they would definitely be sacrificing that revenue stream a bit if it was a handheld based platform. And I don't know. I think there'd be some reluctance on their part to do it. But be that as it may, I think playing off of a TV screen is something that all of their future consoles will have, whatever structure that comes into being.
But then, you know, before the Wii U was unveiled, or when the Wii U was unveiled, Iwata was saying that they really wanted to try and get away from the TV.
Yeah, and that would literally be off TV play. I know this sounds dismissive, but Iwata says a lot of things.
All right, well, why don't we move on to the next email? And James, why don't you read this one?
Austin writes, I know Nintendo isn't going to give up sales on releasing a new, quote, in-between Pokemon game. He's referencing the third game that always happens. But do you guys think the series would benefit from DLC? New Pokemon could easily be added along with new gyms. I personally would love to see DLC for Pokemon X and Y. I think it would definitely help people not feel burned out on the series if Nintendo just started updating these titles instead of releasing nearly the same game every year. What do you guys think?
I'm so ignorant about Pokemon.
Here's the trade-off here, is that ultimately his initial statement is reality. Nintendo isn't going to give up sales on releasing the in-between games.
Right.
I mean, they to their credit, they didn't do this for Black and White. They made Black 2, White 2, which are standalone unique
Instead of
titles.
One third game, they made two third games.
No, because they made a new game. I mean, it reused stuff, but those third games, they're the same fucking game.
Right.
This is a different game. I mean,
I wonder if they would consider doing something like New Super Luigi U and making the third version, Pokemon Z, a DLC upgrade to your existing X or Y.
What would you add to it? So you wouldn't add new Pokemon because that's your iteration series. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what does Adamantium Pokemon or whatever it is, I don't know what they're called, but the third ones, what do they bring usually?
They usually give you different starting Pokemon, I think.
Is that it?
There's a few other things. They always add a couple of really kind of minor mini games and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, so in Yellow, Pikachu followed you around. Right. And they replaced Team Rocket with Team Rocket from the TV show.
And it had a special color palette on Super
it did,
Game Boy.
Yes. In Crystal, they added you could use your cell phone to battle people over your cell phone network.
Yeah, so when they brought that to America, that one turned out to be pretty much exactly the same.
Well, the only difference was you could play as a girl. That was pretty much the only difference in Crystal.
Yeah, you could play as a girl, right.
And the characters are mixed. I mean, not the characters, the Pokemon is mixed. So if you buy the third game, you literally cannot just get one other game and catch them all. The third game is the ultimate screw job because you have to then have Red and Blue if you got Yellow because it's a mix of the two.
I thought it had all of the Pokemon from Red.
No.
Really? Oh.
Yellow had a subset of the Pokemon.
Oh, weird.
That was different than Red and Blue's subset of the Pokemon.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll definitely release Pokemon Z at retail, but I do kind of hope they give some kind of option to let you, you know, add it as a mode, basically, and maybe on the title screen you can push a button and flip over to Z if you want to play that instead.
Yeah, I'm just not sure what they would...
They keep separate save files.
I'm just not sure what they would do.
But
they
don't have to do that much. I mean, people
will
buy it.
I know, I mean...
I don't know, maybe... Hasn't Nintendo kind of given up on the third one? The remakes
no, they did
of
Platinum.
Gold... Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, they did Platinum, and then they did the remakes, and... I mean, they're not going to remake Crystal. No one's nostalgic for Crystal.
I actually did play Crystal.
I did too. I think I reviewed it. I tried to.
Crystal is that was the low point of the – that was the nadir of the Pokemon series.
I just don't understand why – yeah, you guys haven't convinced me why someone would buy the third one.
Oh, no. There's no reason to buy the third one.
It's completely fucking illogical,
Guillaume.
I'm not trying to convince you why.
I'm just saying
they
it
will.
Exists.
It's a fact of the universe that people will buy it.
It is the thing they do. I mean, Yellow sold really well.
Yeah, that I can understand. If you tie it more with a TV show, you're going to catch all those people who are watching the TV show and didn't play the previous games.
Yeah. I actually owned Yellow. It was trippy because you had to start with an electric type, which would be the worst way to start the game. So the game became instantly much freaking harder.
Yeah. Huh. You know, I think it's also treated almost like a Game of the Year edition that you might see with other franchises.
Oh, totally.
So for a lot of people, it's like, oh, you know, I never got around to playing X or Y, but I heard a lot of good things about it. Now there's this new version. If I'm going to ever jump into it, it might as well be the new one. And that ends up kind of throwing them into a sale that Nintendo might not have gotten otherwise. So it's a way to dredge the game back up into the conversation months and months later after the original release.
It's a way to have a yearly iteration without having a yearly iteration.
Like, sort of, yeah. And if you already played the other ones and you have no interest in playing a slightly tweaked version, just don't buy it, and then you don't get the franchise fatigue. You know, then you get a little bit of a break before the next real sequel comes out.
I'll be curious
if they do it. You know,
I'll be curious if they do just Z in the vein of Yellow and Crystal and Platinum, or if they do like an X and Y 2 in the Black and White 2 mold. I can see them XXYY. Well, no, they wouldn't
would do that.
YY would just be dead in the water, like just
or maybe it's XX and XY.
I just don't know that they're going to – I mean, they obviously spent a significant amount of money making this game's engine, and they're going to reuse it, obviously. It'll be used in future Pokemon games. I don't know that they'd want to devote the resources to building any new 3D models to go in a new iterator version.
Oh, they'll do some extra mega evolutions and throw in like a new legendary.
Yeah, or they'll throw in a legendary they've been holding out on.
Sure.
Oh, he's in there. He's in your Pokedex. You can't catch him unless you get this version.
What? Yeah, like Mew.
Right. Wasn't there a one of those eShop games that was the only way to catch certain Pokemon?
Oh, I'm sure there was. There was some bullshit going on with the eShop
stuff. So I'm not sure if I believe in a DLC future for Pokemon, but I do think that they're probably going to keep releasing these kind of side apps.
Are you kidding? They're selling a cloud storage service. They are
they
all
are literally
in.
Selling cloud storage for your numbers.
Pokemon apps are a huge new revenue sector for this company.
Yeah. So I don't think DLC per se is what we're going to look at. It's going to be side apps, you know, and you're going to be able to catch some Pokemons that you can't usually catch in the games, and you're going to be able to import them in your game.
Yeah, I mean, what they have to sell you on, and I say this like it's a hard, what they have to sell you on is the opportunity to get something you can't. They are trying to sell to their hardest of hardcore audiences. There are two categories there. There are the people who like to create really, really strong Pokemon teams, and then there's the ones who like to catch everything. And you can cater to both of those audiences really expensively, and they'll probably cave and buy it. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see opportunities to like go to special places that you buy access to. The tricky bit is, would they just be selling you a pass, and would that disengender the good faith that series has, or would they be selling you new game content that's like not on your game already?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Minoru wrote a really nice editorial about how Nintendo's been handling online transactions this year. And we talked about last year, too, how even as they're getting into DLC now, they're doing it in different ways than other companies that seem less exploitative.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious. I mean, this is – with Pokemon, they could really go really gnarly here and, you know, sell people rare Pokemon. They could sell you, like, Ultra Balls that are otherwise difficult to get or something like that. So you can use your real money to buy Pokeballs instead of the game money.
They could sell you the opportunity to catch a rare Pokemon.
I think that's illegal in Japan, but –
because they would argue it is a game of skill as to whether or not you catch it. Not a game of luck.
Yikes. Yeah, I mean, there's a dark place that this could go to, but at the same time, you know, they have shown a willingness to be a little more smart, I think, about how they approach DLC, and I'm very curious to see how they do it here, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they could be super exploitative, or they could be to me, ultimately, what's going to be interesting is, do they get pushed by their investors to go full-on exploitation mode?
Yeah, like real money Pokemon auction house.
Yeah, like, all right, you want to get Mewtwo? You got to buy it. It's going up on auction once a day. The whole world's bidding on it. It's like, oh my God, really? Because they could be super evil. I mean, you could do serious evil with the series.
I don't think they're going to do it.
I don't think they're going to go nuts, but I think there will be opportunities that they will look at that will be very difficult to resist that may not come off as the most fan-friendly approach to DLC.
Hmm. It does scare me a little bit. The game has been so incredibly successful already. I mean, Pokemon right now is probably saving Nintendo's ass for the next few months.
Yeah, and I think that in any other hands, Pokemon would have exhausted itself long ago.
Right.
Like, they I don't know what they're doing, but it's working. Like, the Pokemon is still super popular.
It's so the perk is Pokemon does two things that no other franchise really does. It has a million tendrils, you know, different elements of the franchise, and those franchise consistently bring in a new generation of fan bases
mm-hmm.
that sort of get caught in the circle of life that is the Pokemon ecosystem. So they're little kids turning on Cartoon Network before they go to school in the morning. Guess what airs like all morning? The new Pokemon series, new one. So, oh, hey, it's a self-perpetuating machine at this point. They basically just have to keep fueling it by sending Ash to places that they've never even thought existed. And he just keeps finding fucking continents, man. He just keeps finding them. I don't know where they're coming from. As long as they keep it going, I don't know. I mean, it's not that they are reselling to the same people, and the series has reached a point where you can be nostalgic for the second and third game in the series because they're so long ago. So they can target that audience, but they can also target this whole new audience every single generation. It's a model not dissimilar to what Disney does with their shows. They kill a show every few years, even if it's popular, because they want to bring in that next generation. They don't care about the current revenue. It's all about keeping it alive with the next set of kids. It's like super marketing 101.
Scary.
It is. It's there are very smart corporate minds behind that whole op.
Yeah. Well, then it seems like DLC is inevitable. We'll just have to wait and see.
It is. It's
what
just
form
a matter
it
of
takes.
Yep. How evil will you be?
And it may not be in this game. You know, maybe they did so much in this game that they just didn't have time to put in the hooks for it. But there'll be a lot of pressure for them to do it next time.
I'm
or maybe
sure
patch
the hooks
them
are
in.
There. I'm sure the hooks are there. It's just a matter of are they going to use them.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we move on to the final email this week, and Guillaume's going to read it.
Leo writes, I'm playing Fire Emblem Awakening right now. I think I'm more than halfway through, and I'd like to get the DLC, but I don't know when to get it. I don't want to buy it and then find out that my characters aren't strong enough to have a chance in the battles. And on the other hand, I don't want to wait too long and buy DLC after my characters are so leveled up and it's not any fun anymore because there's no challenge. Any advice?
James?
Well, keep in mind, I did this a long time ago. I believe it's kind of a mix. I want to say there's difficulty rating on all the DLC.
Mm.
And it's pretty accurate. I'm not 100% on that, though.
But so the difficulty rating, is it just like 1 star, 2 stars, and that doesn't tell you anything? Or does it say, well, you should be at level 5?
No, it's stars-based, I believe. But keep in mind, also, when they started releasing DLC for this game, except for like that first pack, I had already beaten the game.
Oh, jeez.
I blazed through this game.
So you may not be the best person to ask then. So
no, but you know what? The DLC itself, it's not so much, at least the ones I played. I didn't play all of them. A lot of times it's not the individual challenge there. Some of them are a little tricky. A lot of times it's more they put you in a unique circumstance you have to work your way through.
Hmm.
Or you're really just paying for the opportunity to see the characters interact, aka the spa vacation DLC.
Yeah.
You get some mock DLC on the cartridge.
You do.
So like the one that you get or that
and
I
some
did.
Of that's some of that can be savagery. Some of the late stuff there, I mean, really brutal stuff.
You mean the paralogues?
Yeah,
I like those.
Yeah, some of those can get right difficult.
And you had some weird. I think like the very first one that you get, there's this farmer kid who wants to fight with you, and he's absolutely useless. But you have to level him up at least once,
Donald.
And you have to keep him alive, and then you can keep him.
I wasn't talking about those. I was talking about the ones where you get to fight parties.
Oh,
of,
and you get the cards that summon.
Yeah. Some of those can get gross.
Those didn't seem very interesting to me, so
I did them just because they were content in the game at that point. But some of the cards actually end up being kind of fun. But yeah, how many different ways do you want to get Marth? Well, I've got Marth like five ways right now. I think we're good on Marths.
Yeah, there's a lot of Marths. So Leo, it may be the best advice we could give you is go to GameFAQs, look for a DLC guide, and maybe they have suggested levels for the different DLC packs. I bet that exists.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah. And I'll say that,
or maybe at IGN, in general, somebody's got a guide for it.
I don't think they're that hard in general. There's a couple that are a little trickier than others. So if you're halfway through the game, you're at least clear for, I would say, the whole first pack. Maybe even the second pack.
Okay. Good to know. It's a very good question. It's one thing that keeps me from buying DLC sometimes. I feel like, well, I don't really know what the, you know, if a lot of times I'll be like halfway through the game when the DLC comes out and people are talking about it, and I think, I don't really want to buy that because I probably can't even play it until I beat the game. And by the time I beat the game, I may be pretty satisfied with it, you know?
Right.
So a lot of times I end up kind of thinking about buying the DLC, and then I usually just decide, I've got other games I haven't even played yet. So
yeah, it's, to me, I usually end up with DLC after I've beaten a game because I don't feel like I was fulfilled.
You are very hard to please, James.
It's not a matter of being hard to please. It's like, okay.
You're insatiable.
Yeah. I want a little bit more out of this game. Like, I like something about this game. I just want to experience a little bit more.
Right. Especially strategy games.
Yes.
Can you imagine Ogre Battle with DLC?
Oh, I'd go bankrupt.
Yeah, you'd have to sell your house.
That's fine.
Yeah. But you'd never look back, right?
No, of course not. I mean, I'd quit my job. I'd sell my house. And I would spend the next 6 to 8 months documenting all the ins and outs of that game.
Yeah.
But it'd be worth it because then we can see retroactive on it in 10 years. And I go, look, if you had just gotten the crystal shoes, it'd be fine. You'd be fine. You could turn her into a princess and she's super powerful. Why didn't you do that? No, you sold them, you asshole.
We're listening to James lose his mind on the radio right
then
now.
Then I'd start crying. And I'd just start crying.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for listener mail this week. Thank you, everyone who wrote in. And as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com or check the show notes over on the website. And also wanted to mention that the new episode of Discover Music Project that I talked about last week is out now. Again, it's about Vampire Weekend, and I hope people go check that out. You can find it at crosstalk.com with a W. Or do a search for Crosstalk or Discover Music Project on iTunes. Thank you, everyone, for the comments on that. And I guess that's going to do it for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
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 Anyway, so that's Secret of Mana, and I will keep playing it, but it's just it's a little bit overrated.
Hmm. I would agree with that.
I don't know. I wonder how many people are just nodding their heads at home, and how many people are like, you know, grabbing pitchforks.
I'm not quite pitchforks, but it's I don't think it's overrated. I think it's a game that is accepted for what it is.
I guess, but when the original is superior in many ways, not every way. That's for sure. But in many
fair,
ways,
most people don't necessarily have the reference point.
I violently disagree with that statement.
Eh.
I would say it is superior in no ways.
Really? Well, yeah. I think you're wrong.
Well, you're definitely wrong, so it's fine.
So we've come to an agreement.
The vast majority of people who have played both games agree with me.
Ooh.
So,
but who is that?
That would be pretty much... There's a reason the game is, as you say,
overrated.
You know
that well-known gaming forum, people who have played both Final Fantasy Adventure and Secret of Mana.
It is a tremendous... Yeah, but
they're extremely hard to find.
If the game is so overrated, then obviously people must care for it quite a lot.
But then, on those episodes yourself, you were saying, wow, this is not as good as I remembered.
I acknowledge the game has issues.
Yeah, and you're just like, this is
still
not as good
really
as I
good
remember.
Game.
You were basically saying, I overrated this.
I disagree. I don't think so. I think it's a really good game.
I've
played it since that retroactive. It's a really good game. It's just, it's different. I think that's the biggest thing. There's not much out there like it.
No, but just being different. Yeah, but just being different is not really.
I don't like it because it's different. Really. I think because it's different, it's hard to contextualize.
No, but I understand what's going on. I can figure out what the systems underneath the combat are, but it's not as readily apparent to people who don't play regularly RPGs and video games. And it just, there's so many things that need to be tweaked and tuned up to actually make sense. You know, like,
do you think it's just too overly obtuse, especially for like a multiplayer game where you might pull in someone who's not as good as you are?
Well, you know, more indication.
Fuck them. Don't have friends that aren't as good as you are. Problem solved. Done.
No, but
don't,
it doesn't.
Don't
have
sell yourself short.
It's cooperative. I mean, it lends itself to having players of, you know, asymmetrical skill.
Yeah, but it needs more feedback as to like who actually landed a shot and why the shot didn't land and things like that. Like you kind of feel like you're repeatedly hammering on the enemies. Sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't, and it's there's no
JRPGs.
Don't get a feedback
do
as to why. Sure, but they're not real, you know, pseudo real time like this one. It doesn't feel right. Like, you know, it's kind of like the people who complain about the first Mass Effect because, you know, sometimes you would shoot straight at the guy and it would miss. Or Alpha Protocol, you know, like the...
Don't bring Alpha Protocol into this.
No, but...
That game has more issues than your gun missing when you shoot right at somebody. No, but I mean, like, I'm playing Nino Kuni right now. You just miss sometimes. And there's no... I mean, that's still out there. That's not... that's just part of the RPG dice rolls.
Yeah. Are you saying that Secret of Mana doesn't convey to the player that you have missed? Because I seem to recall there's a little graphic thing that comes up and says, miss.
Yeah.
Well, it conveys either that you... No, actually, it doesn't say that you miss. It just, like, nothing shows up. You see damage when it lands.
Yeah. Okay.
But it doesn't tell you if it's because the enemy dodged or if it's because you actually swung and missed, you know, like if you...
Same difference, though.
No, but...
It doesn't really matter to you.
You know, like you can't tell, okay, did it block? Did it dodge? Or did you wildly miss the mark? You know, like did you actually, you know, were you...
I see. I don't ever recall having that kind of issue with it. My issues more tend to be with just the fact that the game can feel slow.
Yeah.
So in what way is Final Fantasy Adventure inferior?
Every way.
Okay.
Holy shit. Okay. Maybe we should table this for the panel at PAX East next year or something like that. Because I really want to kind of get the public, you know,
I don't think that's going to draw people. We're going to talk about Final Fantasy Adventure. Nope. Keep walking.
What if that's the name of the panel?
We will get negative people to show up.
Yeah, really.
The absence of people will actually cause people to dematerialize from this space.
I will enter that room and you guys won't even be there. It's going to be...
You would enter the room and fall into an abyss.
You would enter the room and the fight music would start playing and the spotlights would come up.
Okay, let's move on.
No. Yeah, let's move on.
I will say though, one of the last times I played that game, I actually played it online via an emulator with somebody. And that's a really crazy way to play that game.
Did it work though? I mean, were you satisfied?
Yeah, it worked great actually. It's just a very odd experience playing that game because there's obvious agency going on. Like the characters, the non-you characters are behaving in ways that are not in tune with how the AI behaves, but you don't have that feedback as to what the hell is going on. So a lot of times you're just going like, what are you doing? Oh my god! Why are you so bad at this?
It's a bit like Journey, the way it pairs you up with people in that game.
A little bit, except you know these people, so afterwards you come like, what the fuck? The fuck is your problem?
Alright guys, so let's move on to what John's been playing.